Australia changed this summer. The worst terrorist attack since Port Arthur left the Jewish community and the nation at large shaken. We're in a time of profound grief, and even if you're nowhere near Bondi, you can probably feel it. So how do we process that grief? Because you can't heal without allowing time and space to mourn. The Prime Minister's declared this Thursday a national day of mourning for victims of the Bondi massacre.
This will have a theme of light will win, a gathering of unity and remembrance.
So people have started talking about what a permanent memorial might look like. So how do you create space for grief, whether it's a physical memorial or a day of mourning, to heal and move through tragedy? We're about to talk about it with a few people who've thought a lot about it, but I'd also love to know about your grieving rituals. Are there places you visit? Are there people who you like to be with to help you make sense of tragedy when it strikes? With me is journalist and author Nadine Cohen. She's dedicated a lot of her career to unpacking and understanding death and grief, and she was in Bondi on the evening of December 14. Nadine, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Tegan.
Nadine, can you tell me a bit about what that evening, how it unfolded for you?
Yeah, sure. So I was at a yoga class, and it's my yoga studio is in Bondi, directly opposite the pavilion, metres away. And I had come out and I was on my way to my sister's, and I had walked maybe 50 metres and I heard a series of loud bangs. And I think everyone there, I froze, and in like a split second I managed to think, oh, it must be fireworks. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, wait, it's light. And then immediately people started shouting, there's a shooter, run. And so the instinct is just to like get inside somewhere. Mm. And so I ran back to the yoga studio and announced that there were shooters, and we barricaded ourselves in.
There's been so much talked about that particular day, but for you, the following day, you went back to the first vigil. Can you tell me about what it was about that vigil that made it an important place to be?
I think like I'm very much a rip the Band-Aid off and do the scary things straight away person, because I know myself, and I'm also a dwell on things and let them build up in my mind person. And so to me, going down there straight away was quite important, just to not be scared to go to that part of Bondi or to Bondi at all, because I don't live in Bondi, but, you know, my family does, a lot of my life is there. But also my niece... we had a very stressful time with my niece, who was uncontactable for quite a while after the shooting and had been in Bondi. And it was a really important moment to kind of be with her there as well.
So your work as a journalist has focused a lot on death and grief. How has it felt to you to be living this in a very personal way, with that as the backdrop of your career?
Yes, it's quite surreal. Obviously I wasn't at the event, but I felt the weight of it. And, I have on my podcast, we've talked a lot about trauma and group trauma and disaster and tragedy. And so, a few months ago we did an interview with a man who is a teacher in America, and I told him, you know, we don't have, you know, mass shootings in Australia. You know, we had one, and it hasn't happened since. And so for it to kind of happen and maybe be part of it so soon after, and considering my background, it's been pretty surreal.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Nadine Cohen, who's a journalist and author. She's a co-host of Grave Matters on SBS, talking about her experience being in Bondi the night of the shooting. Also with me is Joel Adler, who's an artist who's who has a piece of art that's currently being used as a temporary memorial. Joel, tell me about your artwork.
So it's called the Sanokia. The name of it, I mean, it was a play on words. A Hanukkah is this kind of object that we use during the festival of Hanukkah that essentially is a light sculpture. Typically, they're very small and they sit on a table and you light them with candles. And this particular artwork we made to be really big, it's 3 meters tall. We installed it in Dover Heights, which is only a few minutes up the road from Bondi. And the work, we installed it on the Friday, which was, you know, 48 hours before the attack. And it was programmed to automatically come on at about 7 p.m. on Sunday. And at that same time down the road, this terrible attack was happening. And it was this really strange coincidence. And in the days after the attack, it kind of took on this different meaning to a lot of people in the community.
So you were already building it before the attack happened. It's not like...
We built it a few weeks before, installed it a few days before the attack as part of the Festival of Hanukkah. And it turned on within minutes by coincidence of the attack.
What's it like as an artist to have created something with a particular purpose in mind and see the symbolism of that piece shift so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, the symbolism to me, it hasn't shifted so much. It's about light. It's about having an object that represents Judaism in the public space. And I think that hasn't changed. But obviously the context around it has changed and it's just become more important to have those objects out there and more important to the community to have things to look up towards.
Nadine, with your connection to the eastern suburbs and your Jewish faith, what did it mean? What does it mean to you to sort of see people being able to come around a physical object like Joel's Sanokia?
Look, I think in general, objects and, you know, physical memorials play a big part in any community's healing. You know, it being a Hanukkah and like the fact that Joel built it, you know, specifically for that night, you know, is so much more powerful. And I hope that, you know, we find somewhere that it can stay potentially, you know, permanently.
Here on ABC Radio National, you're listening to Life Matters and we're talking about why we grieve collectively when something huge happens like the Bondi Massacre. On the text line, one person says, I went on a road trip from Melbourne to Sydney 1 week after Bondi. The 12 hours gave me time to grieve and fall back in love with what makes the country so special. I resigned from working for a Jewish organisation so that I could infuse myself back into the broader community. Shows what we're all made of. Well, also with me is Associate Professor Margaret Gibson. She's a sociologist in death and grief studies at Griffith University. Margaret, we've seen these very public outpourings of grief. Why do we seek to go outside to grieve?
Oh, I think in the case of this horrific massacre, it's really important to have forms of collective solidarity and forms of collective actions of care. So the kind of spontaneous memorials that started to really gather a pace in the days and, you know, weeks after that horrific event was a way for people to make meaning together and do that reparative work that you have to do when there's been a trauma and a space and a place has been radically ruptured in terms of the kind of normality and everyday expectations that people have around what that space is. And so it has to sort of shift the meaning and try and repair that work of you know, re-owning that space in terms of shifting it beyond simply this raw space of trauma.
What's the significance of something like a statue or a sculpture? We've got Joel's Sanokia, the symbolic Hanukkah that he is there. That's being used as a temporary memorial. There's talk about what a permanent memorial could look like. Why are they significant to us?
Well, I think the first thing is that spontaneous memorials literally try to recover that space, you know, in that sort of full sense of the word of recovery. But there's still that wound underneath. And so it's like putting a Band-Aid on a terrible wound and trying to do that healing work. But, you know, there's always that question of time around memorials. So, you know, eventually, you know, spontaneous memorials, you know, they go, they disappear. I know that the artifacts at this memorial are being collected, which is really amazing. And that's a really new kind of, you know, since 9/11, the idea of collecting the artifacts around this a space of trauma has really, you know, taken on a new idea. So they don't disappear. The objects get preserved in some way or reimagined in some way through a different kind of installation. But doing that sort of work then towards a more permanent memorial, that's a lot more tricky because you have to have really good consultation. And obviously the Jewish community is going to be the key group to consult with for something that's meaningful. But it also then needs to engage the broader public around memory work, where there's a kind of critical and reflective consciousness that keeps that story alive, but also enables people to move forward and develop some sense of responsibility for the past, and then as part of that, responsibility for the future, you know, particularly around social cohesion and inclusion of diversity.
There's so many different facets to this. The other thing that's interesting, so we're talking about physical memorials, but we've also got the National Day of Mourning coming up on Thursday. There'll be a minute's silence at 7:01 p.m. What is it about time, and or where did the idea of a minute's silence come from?
That has a history in terms of war memorialization. And, you know, I think it's not to be unexpected that these kinds of rituals will shift into any kind of event that has national significance, such as this horrific massacre. So it's got a history in terms of war history, but it can also shift into sort of broader acts of memorialization and remembrance work. And I think it's really important to have something that marks time. I love the idea of a minute's silence. I also love the idea of collective forms of action. So, you know, I think it was a night or two after the massacre, people were invited to light candles in their window, which is something that I did. I felt I wanted to do an action. And part of that, even though we're all sort of separate and we're in our own homes, knowing that other people are doing that creates a collective imaginary that we're sort of working together to do this reparative work and to demonstrate forms of public care.
Nadine, Jewish grieving rituals have been really important to you in the aftermath of this event as well.
Yeah, and I want to say, you know, I'm not practicing in a religious sense, but cultural rituals and even religious rituals, I find a lot of comfort in. I, you know, straight away the next night we had prayers, we lit lit a Hanukkah, we, you know, we sang, we did all the things that we are used to doing when a single individual dies. And, you know, it was all the more powerful to do it surrounded by lots of people, you know, not just Jews, Bondi community, people who'd come down. And to, I guess, be in that ritual surrounded by support was really, you know, I won't say it was healing because it was too soon, but it was definitely resonant.
Joel, what about for you?
Yeah, I mean, we also lit a Hanukkah on the second night, and I heard a lot of stories from friends of people who didn't light one on the first night because, I mean, Hanukkah is not the most important holiday, or wasn't in the past. But there's a lot of stories of people who started lighting it from the second night after what happened.
We're talking about grieving rituals here on Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm with Nadine Cohen, who's a journalist and author, co-host of Grave Matters on SBS. Joel Adler, who's the artist behind a sculptural Hanukkah that's being used as a temporary memorial in Bondi at the moment. And Margaret Gibson, a sociologist in death and grief studies at Griffith University. And I'm asking you about what your experience has been of collectively grieving, where you've really felt connected to a public event and you've wanted to grieve publicly. What did that look like for you? Arthur in Sydney says, my first memory of tears to grief to an event was as a teenager hearing about the Granville train crash. Another says, I'm an artist who's been exploring grief for several years, creating altars to honour and acknowledge grief. I held a community event called The Place for Lost Feelings in 2022, where people were invited to visit a botanical installation to sit with and acknowledge grief, whether it be for a pet who died, or a family separation, or a body that hurts. The Place for Lost Feelings is happening again in March in Healesville. So if you're in that area, you can check that out. Joel, thinking about the permanent memorial, the discussions that are in place around that, no matter who makes it, what elements would you like to see in it to make it useful?
Well, I think the bridge is an interesting, I think it could be an interesting metaphor. And there's been a lot of conversation about this bridge. And I think maybe that's something we could incorporate it. Also, I think the idea of stones, and in Judaism, on a gravesite, you lay stones instead of flowers. It's meant to be more permanent. And there's something about the enduring memory in that as well. So I think maybe the incorporation of really permanent materials. But I think above everything, it should be a place where people can come and actually understand what happened. And it's almost like a piece of education as well. There's, I don't know, I feel like when I was there, I went back to Bondi a few times and I saw people taking selfies on the bridge and almost being, you know, coming to Bondi to see. It's almost like this infamous site. And I think if people are going to come because of that, they should at least learn what happened, and there should be some education there as well.
Mm. Margaret, what elements do you see as being useful and important in a public memorial like this?
I think that you want a memorial that can really actively engage people. And I think, as Joel said, you want it to do that work of public education. I think a lot of traditional memorials don't necessarily do that. But if a memorial is designed well and there's really good consultation around it, and it's got lots of ways for people to engage with it in meaningful ways, provide reflection, provide lots of different things, because there's different audiences. You know, there's the people that are most affected by a particular event of trauma. And so you want it to really work for those people, but you want it to reach out to the broader community and engage them. Because it's about what happened in the past, but you've got to then make that be relevant in the future and still engage people in the future about what happened, and trying to sort of stop any kind of future events like that happening.
Mm. Nadine, what has helped you? It's still so fresh, but what has helped you begin to heal?
I don't know if I have yet. Mm. I think, you know, for at least the first 2 weeks, I was in a daze. Like, I just, you know, I didn't have executive functions. I could barely do anything. I was just walking around and still very fresh and scared of crowds and scared of open spaces and scared of closed places. And look, I don't think that's gone down that much. I also think that, you know, this wasn't just an accident. This was an intentional incident that has extremely wide-reaching political and social, you know, consequences. And I think, you know, people have started to grapple with that. And, you know, I have to say, stay off social media mostly, because there's so much, you know, there's so much hatred. And I don't know if, while we're in this climate of tension, you know, healing can properly begin at all.
Joel?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very similar. I think in the days afterwards, I was talking with friends about how it feels impossible that we could even congregate as Jews or have any kind of group gatherings again. But then I think seeing people coming to Bondi and immediately after coming together, I realized that it's more important that we do that as often as possible, and that we show that we're not scared. This isn't going to change us. If anything, it's going to make us stronger.
Joel, Nadine and Margaret, thank you all so much for joining me today and sharing. Nadine Cohen is a journalist and author. Joel Adler is the artist behind a sculptural hanukkah being used as a temporary memorial in Bondi at the moment. And Associate Professor Margaret Gibson is a sociologist in death and grief studies at Griffith University. And thank you for sharing your thoughts and feelings as well. One person says, yes, rebuild the bridge in Bondi as a memorial. Don't let it be destroyed. Erasure is not healing. healing. Another person says, I went to a memorial event for people who had lost loved ones to suicide. Standing in a group of weeping strangers, linking arms and sharing grief has stayed with me for years. There's great power in community.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.